Welcome to the Live Your Edge podcast. This is Gilbert Joy, your host. The Live Your Edge podcast is where I interview 7- and 8-figure entrepreneurs, influencers, and successful business owners who in their own right were able to create a life on their own terms. We talk a lot about stepping out of your comfort zone, but what does it really mean to be in discomfort and how you can expand your so-called comfort zone by being able to constantly test and challenge yourself. Today, we'll be speaking with Sharon Jern. Sharon is a graduate from UC Berkeley and has worked over 7 years as a marketing professional at various startups and even at Google. Back in 2016, she quit her job, traveled the world for 2 years as a digital nomad, and ended up building 10 passive income streams and increasing her net worth despite expenses. And today we're going to be talking about what are some of the ways that you can start to generate passive income even without spending a lot of money, even without a lot of experience, and even from the comfort of your home. So join me in welcoming Sharon Jern. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Live Your Edge podcast. This is Gilbert Joy, your host. Today, I'm joined with Sharon Jern. Sharon, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome to the show. I know you are a nomad. Well, now everyone's not a nomad right now because they're stuck at home or stuck in wherever country they're in. But you're a nomad and you are specialized in teaching people about passive income. Mm-hmm. So welcome to the show, first of all. And kind of walk us through your journey. Like, how do you get into this idea of being a digital nomad? Because, you know, like both of us, we come from sort of Asian culture, and something like going out of your way to travel the world and do all these crazy stuff just seems really remote.
So I digital nomad from like 2016 to 2018. So I came back in 2018. But before that, I went on this like solo Europe trip in like 2014, just like for a month. And I think that inspired me a lot. I met a lot of people from all walks of life and just like learned about their journeys or their passions and everything like that. And it just like opened my eyes a lot because I've been in the Bay Area for like 20 something years at the time, like 20 something years. And I was just like, I hadn't experienced life outside of it. And I knew there's a lot for me to learn. So it just made me think maybe I want to create that financial freedom to be able to like go out there and not have to worry too much. So you know, some people just like to spend all their money traveling and then come back and need to like work a job and, you know, be forced into that life. So I wanted to make sure I had that freedom. So I started studying a lot of like books and blogs and things like that. Yeah. A lot of different resources. Yeah. And then I was like, in 2016, I was like, you know what, I want to get this like one way ticket and, you know, hope for the best. Like I'm going to prepare.
What was your first destination?
It was Stockholm in Sweden.
Okay. That's not the typical, I would say not the one that
is not. Yeah.
Because when it comes to my mind, the first ticket that people usually get, at least nomads that, originally, you know, from the States, lived in the States for a long time, is usually Thailand. It's usually Bangkok or Chiang Mai or somewhere.
True. I mean, I was in Stockholm for like 5 nights, and then I went to Athens for a month, Bucharest for a month, like a different like European countries for a month each time. And then I went to like Southeast Asia and stuff like that. Yeah, but I know what you mean, like most nomads go there first for sure.
Yeah, because the first thing that comes to mind when you know, like even when I was starting my journey back in 2018, so I pretty much when you you know, put a pause on your journey, because we never say it's like over. We don't know in the future we might be going, you know, nomading again. But I say like 2018, pretty much when you came back, I pretty much started my journey. But I started in from Hong Kong, mm-hmm. And you know, I find that it's quite interesting, like having this dynamic of people starting from different places, but having to manage that. What I'm really getting at is trying to manage their bankroll. And I imagine going to Europe on the first try, mm-hmm. rather than Southeast Asia first, was like, you know, a huge strain on, you know, finances and resources. But of course, like, you know, in Europe, depending on how you stay and all of that, it could be manageable, at least the transportation wise. Mm-hmm. And I imagine like the cost of living was pretty high there. So how were you able to maintain your lifestyle there?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Like, I actually only spent $1,400 a month overall after like my whole journey, essentially. And
including Europe.
Yeah. Like everything. Yeah. And well, a lot of the countries I traveled to weren't as expensive. I did visit like Berlin and London and places like that. But I feel like in the beginning I did three part-time remote positions and then like kind of transitioned into passive income to make sure I was like good. But even like before that, I booked 6 months of my trip before I even left. So I already knew I would be okay. Like I booked the accommodations, the flights, just to make sure I was okay with my finances. Yeah.
That's scary though, right? That's just thinking about like booking 6 months ahead and then not knowing like what's going to happen, given it was your first time.
I feel safer doing that, I think, because if you're gonna have to do it so spontaneously, you're like, I don't know, you don't know exactly where you're gonna go, you don't know where you're gonna stay. But then like having it all planned out, I was like, okay, this is like my schedule, so I already knew where I was gonna go. And then after that, I actually went to like Hong Kong because like my parents have a place there too. I stayed for a little bit and then I went to like, you know, Korea, Taiwan, and other areas like that. But everything was kind of planned out. So I didn't feel that unsafe or anything.
Yeah. I imagine speaking for myself, I also like to have it planned out before I make my way out there. I would just say like the scary part is like knowing you have to commit to that schedule because it would be very difficult to deviate from it. For example, when I was in Japan, I had that problem where one day in every city, which I do not recommend,
that's
I was
too much.
Pretty much doing kind of like the backpack. I was kind of doing the backpack thing in Japan, not really nomading, because nomading, you actually stay there for a couple of weeks, a month, 2 months, etc., and really get to know the place. But I was like, okay, you know what? Japan's pretty expensive. I was like, you know what? Let's kind of go start from all the way at the south and then go all the way to the like north. We never really got to the north. We got to Tokyo and that was it. And they're like, yeah, we like Tokyo. We're not going to leave now. But it, you know, it was like a city every single day. And if we had decided at any moment that, oh man, we're tired. I was traveling with my buddy then. We're tired. We're not going to go and take this train, right? Oh, that would just completely screw up the entire itinerary. So, you know, like that sort of stuff. But I'm assuming you have like a buffer because you had, you know, like at least a few weeks in each city or country.
Yeah, I did I would say like a month at each place. And then with like, I was using Airbnb, so they have like month discounts too. So it's like the accommodations were pretty cheap. The airfare, I'm like pretty careful about it, like using Google Flights, getting the best prices and stuff like that. So
it's continuing that, right? Google Flights, aren't they discontinuing that?
Oh, are they? I don't know.
I
but
remember, were they? It kind of.
It was the best. Were. Okay, I don't know, but yeah. I love Google Flights. Yeah.
I think a quick travel hack would be using Google Flights to, because you can do like these split leg things where you're taking different airlines, but you are able to, like, I don't know, some like, let's say a direct flight would be like $400. Actually, even if it's a layover, it might be $400 directly. And then if you took the split flight, you might be able to get it for a lot cheaper because some airlines would just go to certain places a lot cheaper. I don't know. So that would be like a quick travel hack, you know, that came to mind when it comes to using Google Flights. And that's how use it. So when you started working remotely, you know, you start with the three part-time jobs, doing remote work, making some income. At some point, you transition to passive income. So what do you mean by passive income?
Yeah. So I basically made passive income through Etsy. So I sold digital downloads like Photoshop templates and Microsoft Word templates. And then I also was blogging, like doing affiliate marketing. Also like merch by Amazon. There's like so many different ways I tried out because I was also kind of thinking it, my blog could be a place where I can teach people how to do these things. So I would kind of like learn it and document my progress and teach people. So another one is like merch by Amazon where you like upload shirt designs and they're going to like, you know, print and fulfill your orders. You might've heard of it. And then Amazon FBA and just like things like that. So I was trying all these different things and they all work. It's just really about like the amount of focus and time you put into it. So that's what I found. Like they're all pretty doable.
So based on your personality, which one matched for you the most?
Well, I started out with the Etsy one and I think that one fit me really well because is like a lot of graphic design type of stuff. And I was just, you know, making these templates like every day. And it was like kind of fun just doing that and hustling with that. And I feel like the results came in pretty quickly where I started cash flowing. You do have to put a good amount of time into, you know, making all the templates, but it was just work I enjoyed. And then now I feel like I am more into kind of building a brand. So like you've seen me kind of making YouTube videos and podcast episodes and blogging and all of that. And it's just more fulfilling to me for now, like to build this brand where I teach people how to do the same because they're like thankful of, you know, the information and like, you know, being able to help someone is pretty awesome. So.
Yeah. And they don't necessarily need to be nomadic, you know, traveling all the time. And I think sometimes staying in one place, even if you are a nomad and you're staying in one place for a while, just establishing a base, that would be a good way to really build up your stream of, you know, so-called passive income.
Yeah.
Whereas like, you know, the mistake that I made was I was doing too much traveling and I felt like I was on mini vacation and I wasn't really spending enough time building those streams of income when I started out. So long story short, money ran out fairly quickly and I had to like come to terms with, okay, I got to really figure this thing out. And, you know, just kind of sharing what my track was my focus was on doing coaching. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Started off with sales coaching, something that I've been, you know, been part of sales environment for years, and then start with that and then start creating the courses, then started the podcasting and then, you know, all of this stuff. So kind of interesting to hear from someone that has a very different path to approaching it. Cause for example, blogging was not something that I did do some blogging back in like, you know, 2010, 2012. And then I stopped. I wasn't consistent. I admit it. I stopped and then I gave up, almost kind of gave up. So I'm just still wondering like nowadays, cause I'm not familiar so much with blogging ecosystem these days. How profitable is it for bloggers getting into the space now, or even those that have been in there for like a year or so, continue doing so, you know, what recommendations would you have for them if they're in this space?
Yeah, I definitely think it's not like oversaturated and a lot of people might think that. But I've seen bloggers that started maybe like a year ago and they're making a few grand a month already. And I definitely think it's like doable. You just need to like understand SEO and Pinterest strategy. I would say those are the two best ways to drive traffic with your blog. And I even started like a blog in 2018. Like I started my Digital Nomad Quest blog in 2015, but just tried out like a niche type of blog and already started making like a few hundred a month within like the first few months or something like that. So it's like, okay, this works. It's just a matter of kind of doing keyword research and like, you know, doing the right type of research and implementing the strategies in order to like do well on the platform.
How does the money come in though? When you're doing blogging, you're selling products on there, you're taking affiliate cuts, or how does it work?
Yeah. So I would say like some of the main monetization strategies that people use is affiliate marketing and, you know, selling your own courses or books or products. You can do like a membership site type of thing and get sponsorships. There are a lot of different ways. I think it's kind of the same with building any type of platform, like, you know, YouTube, right? You promote products and you, you know, also get ad revenue. Same thing with blogging. It's just kind of like building that traffic and then getting people to like follow what you're doing and then be supporters of what you're doing. And then you recommending the best stuff or like creating your own products that can help your audience.
I'm sure like even like, for example, you just mentioned a blog, it has many multiple purposes or multiple monetization methods. One of them is for the affiliate, another is for selling products, and then you got the ad traffic. Where do you see people slip up in which they spend too much time focused on, you know, in, let's say blogging, and in, as a result, they're kind of like spreading themselves thin.
Spreading themselves thin and like just blogging, or you're saying they're doing too many other things?
Yeah, they're doing too many other things even inside blogging. Like let's say they're trying to monetize it. Where do you see them slip up? Should they try to just do one, pick one and start with that one? Or should they try to experiment with a whole bunch of them and see which one works?
You're saying like experiment with a bunch of different domains, or are you saying a bunch of different post ideas, or what do you mean by that?
Yeah, post ideas, monetization ideas, at the end of the day, being able to monetize their blog.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest things is most people just like give up essentially, right? I think like one of the main things, I think a lot of people say this, right? You have to be passionate about what you're doing, because if you like constantly focus on the money, like content creation is just not one of those things where you can instantly see those results. Yeah. Usually it takes a lot of time, like years, right? So if you don't enjoy what you're doing and you just get burnt out, a lot of people just give up. And just think, you know, this is too saturated. I also think a lot of people face the issue of like, they're just blogging for fun, like blogging for themselves. And I think the main tip also is like, you need to like help other people. Like you need to think in terms of the user of like why they would come onto your blog, and then, you know, deliver the information in a comprehensive way where they can like read through your entire post and be like, okay, I got the benefit from like, you know, reading your post versus you just talking about yourself. So I think that's like a huge thing that a lot of bloggers mess up on too. You know, they don't think in the eyes of the audience. So I think that's like one of the best tips in order to monetize your blog.
Okay. Yeah. There's so many different, you know, a piece of advice out there with growing, you know, using content creation on various platforms. Some people use Medium, some people use, you know, blogs, and then some people use like podcasts, some people use LinkedIn, and there's a lot of different, the thing sometimes is there's so many different choices that it's very easy to get distracted with another shiny object and then give up on the one that you're already working on.
Yeah, definitely.
Easy thing would be like, let's say they're working on the blog and then they see, oh, the trend now is like to write on some other platform instead, and they instantly just kind of jump ship and do some other stuff. And I see that people that do that tend to, one, they burn out very fast, and they try a bunch of stuff and then say, oh, this passive income stuff doesn't work for me, so I'm just gonna just give up and get a job or do something else. And
yeah,
I think it's just not going deep into that, the problem enough.
Yeah. And I think, you know, having your own website, having your own blog is pretty necessary. Like, even if you decide YouTube's your thing, usually, like, I've met a lot of YouTubers that are big now that are like, okay, I want a blog, because that's an additional source, but also you can redirect traffic there and sell your own, you know, things. So a lot of people end up needing a blog ultimately in the end. So I think it's also just like a good skill to learn, and understanding keyword research, like that's important on YouTube as well, where you want to, same tip, right? Where you're, you know, like looking from the audience's perspective of like, okay, are they gonna want to buy a product if they search this keyword or whatever? That's going to be very important for you to like understand, like if they're searching a general keyword, they're probably not going to, you know, want to buy something or like whatever. But if you have a long tail keyword, you know, more words in your keyword where they're searching for something more specific, they're usually trying to get some information about a certain product, or they're trying to, you know, buy something that can help them.
Okay. Yeah. When it comes to keyword research, what sort of tools would you recommend? Is it like the Google Keyword Planner? What sort of tools would you use?
Yeah. I mean, Keyword Planner is like a good free tool. I like to use SEMrush. My friend likes to use Ahrefs. I think, you know, all these work. And in our course, we actually talk about all the different ones and just like how to kind of spreadsheet it out and write down like the volume of searches and like what it says about like the amount of competition around certain keywords. And that will really help you figure out which ones you want to rank for.
Nice. And what if you have this challenge of, well, some people have the challenge of finding the topics. But some people have the topic, but they find out that not so many people look up that topic. Like it's too niche or it's really niche. So how would you kind of like circumvent that?
Yeah, the sweet spot is really the balance between high competition and like low. Like you gotta go in the middle where it's like not too saturated, but also not something where it's like really few searches. You really need to like look for those keywords that hit that sweet spot. But also another thing you can do is when you're like researching the topic, you can use like Moz's you know, Chrome extension, where you can see like the domain authority of different sites when you're searching, and then see like how powerful your competition is. And then that can kind of indicate to you like, oh, I can probably do well with this keyword. And that will help you with choosing your niche too.
Okay, so would you recommend doing the keyword research before creating the piece of content, or creating the piece of content and trying to find the right keywords?
Keyword research first. I definitely try to like have, you know, a spreadsheet of the keywords I want to rank for. And then I also like hire writers too, and like kind of outline stuff for them to like write stuff for certain topics. So that kind of helps me like having it all planned out. You know, batching it all up and then like scheduling it all out, it just helps with like efficiency. And you know, if you write a piece of content and you realize it's way too saturated, or you know, people aren't searching this at all, then you just kind of wasted a lot of time too. But it's also, you know, important to have fun with it too. So you could, you know, essentially like write stuff and then go back into it and like see if you can optimize your post in the future. That's fine. It's just the more optimal way in terms of like money making, that would probably be the best way to like research it first. Even before you even start your blog, it's a good idea to actually research your niche before you like just decide, okay, this is what I want to do. Like you kind of want to see not only like do you love talking about it, but if there's demand, like if people want to read the type of content you want to put up.
So is there some times where you look up the keywords and you say, okay, this is a good topic, but it's not really a topic that you generally enjoy talking so much about. But in fact, the topic you do want to talk about, it doesn't have a lot of, you know, exposure and people are not searching it. And therefore you just kind of like shy away from those. Is that how it turns out?
I think that's more for like when you're choosing the topic of your entire site, I guess. If you know you want to talk about this thing but like no one even cares about it, then maybe you don't want to make a site around it. But I believe that like there's usually opportunity in every niche, and that's like the beauty of it, like that you know, if you are passionate about a certain topic, usually it'll appeal to like a certain audience group. So I think it's fine. I think, you know, with my website, it's very like, I would say the three things I like to talk about is like managing your finances, making passive income, and then kind of like the digital nomad life and like how to, you know, navigate that. And I can see those are pretty broad topics, but like it allows for a lot of different types of posts. So that's another thing too that you might want to think about, of like how specific of a niche do you want to like go in. So it kind of is, again, the whole balance of like high competition versus low competition, like finding that middle sweet spot.
You brought up a good point where you have like three different topics that you write about in your blog. Does that generally perform better, or it's probably really subjective and very like case by case of, let's say you have these three topics, you have a blog with these three topics, and you vary your time talking about each of these topics, whereas maybe someone else has just one topic and they're just all they're talking about is that topic.
Yeah.
Would the former actually like kind of beat out that in the long run?
Mm-hmm.
or not, because how I see the advantage might be is like you have three different topics, and maybe at some point you feel like you want to spend more time talking about one of the three topics or two of the three topics, mm-hmm. and then you can easily sort of transition because your audience base has already been built up following you for you, and mm-hmm. Whereas you know the other is just doing just one topic,
and then
transition. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally get that, because like when I was kind of trying to do a rebrand with my website and things like that, trying to figure out, do I need to even scrap my domain? Because, you know, I was like nomading from 2016 to 2018, and then I came back. So I'm not technically like a digital nomad anymore. I mean, in the future, like kind of what you said of like, we'll, you know, probably go out again and do all that stuff. And it's still interesting to us. But it was kind of like, I was like, oh my God, like, am I kind of screwed with this website? But I think, I asked some like blogging experts too. And, you know, I think it's just like, you know, there's two different strategies. Like one is kind of being the master of that niche. The other is you can also rank for specific pieces of content, you know? So it's like each content is its own opportunity for you to rank well. Yeah. So that's one thing too. But, you know, if you are known for a specific niche, you usually do better because you are that master of that one topic and people will trust you. I would say because my three topics are pretty related, because I want to teach people how to get to that financial freedom point, right? And yeah. Each of those steps are kind of important. So like I would say, you know, you need to understand how to manage your finances. You need to get multiple income sources. And then, you know, the travel part is a little bit of an addition, like a bonus. And yeah. I don't feel like anyone needs to, you know, travel to in order to like live a successful life or whatever. I don't think there's any one right way. I think anyone can, you know, do whatever with their financial freedom. But it's just like an additional part of like, you know, this is the dream. Like it was my dream back in the day, and like yeah. You can take that or leave it, but it's all in the same area, so that's why I like still stick with it. So that's kind of my thought process. It's still kind of niche in a sense of digital nomading plus passive income. It might be like a little bit more unique. So
yeah, so in your case it would be finding complementary topics that reinforce each other, so it kind of allows you to create a recipe for more unique angle in the marketplace. Whereas, you know, some people would come up with, they're master or they're expert in their area, but, you know, drawing other like disciplines and drawing different thought processes would probably not be as a focus for them. Whereas yours is a little bit more fluid. Say.
Yeah, well, yeah, kind of. I mean, I still feel like mine is sort of a niche thing where it's like, oh, okay, this is all about freedom. This is all about designing your life. And that's like always yeah. been my motto. Like I want to inspire people to design their lives. So it's still like in the same topic. I would say like if you start, you know, blogging about fitness and like, you know, and then something else like beauty, like it's just kind of way too irrelevant, then it's like, okay, that's not a good idea.
I think that would definitely dilute your audience.
Yeah, exactly. So I think because it's in the same realm, I think it's okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you mentioned about this Etsy course that you created. Mm-hmm. You know, how can people find out more about it? Like what would they learn from it?
Yeah, so the Etsy one. So basically you know, when I first started nomading, I was, you know, creating these digital products and selling it on my Etsy shop. And it's basically everything I learned from like years of doing this. And there's a lot of things that I like kind of messed up on or didn't focus on, and like realized, you know, if I had this blueprint, it would have saved me a lot of time. So it's just a lot about like, you know, everything I've done and like all the, you know, templates kind of like for descriptions and like the shop rules and all that, like customer support templates, like all that's in there, like everything I basically know, like in order to like run a successful shop. So it just teaches you how to like get from zero to hopefully $1,000 a month passively. So that's what like hopefully people will be able to get to. Wait, what?
So that's a holy grail, right? I mean, yeah. At least for like nomad perspective, what are the different, like in your mind, just a side, mm-hmm. side question, in your mind, what is that sort of tiers when it comes to being, you know, achieving financial freedom.
Yeah.
You know, from 0 to 1,000 a month passive income. And then what are the tiers for you and for you?
Yeah, I feel like back in the day, it was just like, oh, it'd be cool to get a few grand a month passively. And, you know, that really does cover like your expenses, because what I mentioned before is like $1,400 a month was my average of, you know, traveling all over the world, like for 2 years. And I ended up like saving a good amount, like building my nest egg. So essentially, like, technically you could retire, you could be financially free, you know, just $4,000 to $5,000 a month, like passively. But I feel like now I do want to like achieve higher levels, but I also, one of the things that I found was when I came back to the Bay Area, I was just like, I felt like I focused too much on that number amount, and I just cared too much to like increase that. And I want to make sure that I'm always focused on the journey, and the money comes like after. It just wasn't fulfilling when I kept wanting to like focus on money. Mm-hmm. So coming back here, it's all about kind of like building my skills, building my brand, and then the money like comes after. I still do want to achieve those higher numbers. And to me, it's like lean fire is cool, but I want to like be able to not have to think about money at all, of thing. I know it kind of sounds greedy, but it's more about like, you know, removing those restrictions, not having to like budget like a lot, or like save a lot, or like think about what choices you're making, like in like based off of money, basically, right? Like I want to be able to, you know, do things without thinking about it, essentially.
Okay, so that you brought up a good point, because you know, we're both Asian, so Asian parents, we were born with those we grew up under the household where our parents telling us, you know, save your money, don't overspend, live below your means. All of these things. And when you get to a point where, like, I know I have friends that, you know, they start off, you know, saving their money, but as they started to make more, they got about a lot more confident, of course, with what they can do. And they started to, I wouldn't say it's like losing the discipline of it. It's being a little bit more relaxed with it. And like you said, not thinking about, okay, I'm going to go in store. I can't overspend, you know. It's kind of like going and ordering food and then getting the drink, right?
Yeah.
Right. Instead of getting tap water or whatever, you get a drink, and then not having to think about that, right?
Yeah.
That's the kind of thought process I was getting at. Where is there like this kind of tier where, okay, first tier you get your first series of money, and second tier you don't have to think about where you spend your money. Mm-hmm. As much. Now, I'm not saying don't think about where you spend your money, but you know, is there like a sort of like arbitrary figure where, okay, once you start hitting this figure, it's like, yes, I'm still gonna budget, I'm still gonna monitor my cash flow, but I'm not gonna really go and say, you know what, I can't buy this, you know, because I spend quite a bit last week or something like that. And then at what point do you get to like, hey, you know what? I'm going to go into the restaurant today with my friends. I'm not even going to look at the menu. I'm not even going to look at the menu, right? And that. And then from there, it's like, you know what? I just feel like eating this. Actually, I have a story. I don't know if my friend's going to listen to this, but, you know, the other day I was you know, we went kind of shopping, just walking around the stores. And there was a place we were going to go to for food. But it was getting late. It was like 9 p.m., almost 9 p.m. There's a long line. And then I know why there was a long line, because that entire mall was having a huge sale. And then people were lining up and buying stuff. And then they were lining up for food. And I can tell there was like 15 people in front of us. There's no way we're getting into that restaurant. I know it sounds really crazy right now, because we're still in like COVID. And then I'm talking about like people like, you know, waiting online for stuff. But you know, but in Hong Kong, this is kind of okay now, apparently. But waiting online, and I knew for sure we're not going to get in there, me and my buddy. And next door was a French restaurant. And, you know, my pocket was like my wallet was saying, you know what, $20, you know, that's a decent dinner, you know, for Japanese food. And he goes next door, and then he's like, yo, let's get this. And I'm like, what? I looked at the restaurant for a second, right? Because I knew we weren't going to get in there anymore. There was no other places open in that mall. And I just like, really? And then I look at the menu. It's a tasting menu. It's like 8 courses. It's like over $200 per person.
Dang.
And then I was like, really? Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. And he just goes there. I'm like, what? And then, at the end of the day, I won't score any more details because if he ends up listening to this, you might get pissed off. Like I'm sharing. but basically, it was that idea in his mind. Like I felt like in his mind, he wasn't really. He got himself to a point where he's not. He doesn't care that it's costing $200 because his cash flow is to a point where it's not FU money, but it's kind of like, you know what? Like I have nothing else to eat. Right. So I'm going to eat something and this is the available option. So let's eat it. That's the kind of thing. It's like, no, it's cost money. No, it's like that concept just kind of went out the window. And there was a discount too. There was a coupon because he was freaking crazy. Like there's coupons from the shopping mall. So we're actually getting a discount, like 30% off. So for some reason that was a deal. but that's the question. It's like, do you a very long way of asking a question. So in your mind, do you have that sort of kind of like tier? You get to a certain point where you are like not really bothered by how much things cost anymore?
Yeah, I mean, it would probably be, okay, so I feel like I make like over six figures, like well over six figures type of thing. And it's because, well, I'm back with like a full-time position as well as my side hustle money. And it's something I've been thinking about too, of like I don't know what my exact number is. And I realize I don't like spend much anyway, and I don't feel like it, like I don't care to. So it's kind of hard to determine the number because, I mean, if you saw like one of my YouTube videos, is like how I save like 100% of my income. Like I don't really, it was like 100% of my full-time income because my side hustles like, you know, make up for it. And I, you know, I was living at home earlier and then now like I'm with my boyfriend right now, but like essentially I don't pay much in living costs and I don't like, you know, buy stuff much. Like I don't really care to. I have the mentality of like, you know, I have this like used car, like I don't even care to, like I don't want like a nice car because I'm like, that's something I have to worry about too. Like if I had something really nice, I don't want to like worry about it getting damaged or whatever. So it's just like an interesting question because I don't know the answer because like I don't need to spend much money yet I still like want like to make sure I'm okay with like my passive income streams. I still want to grow it. At the same time, one of the things that drives me is like having like a family like in the Bay Area is probably more costly. So that's like something I have to think about and stuff. But like in terms of the exact number, it's hard to say.
I feel like everyone has that sort of threshold. Once they pass that, they're like, okay, you know what? And mind you, my friend, he doesn't really like to talk about. Doesn't really want to think about money. That's the thing. And it's like something that we feel we need to. I don't know. You feel like we need to. Yes, it's important on some aspects. It's not the only thing in life. Mm-hmm. And but we want to get to a certain place where we don't have to think about it anymore, and we can do everything that we want to do, and we don't have to really pay attention so much to it. Mm-hmm. I remember, like, you know, like a lot of families, they get into arguments because of money. And I've always said that I don't want to put myself in a position where I have a family and I'm arguing about money with my spouse. That would be the worst. So I think that, you know, like everyone, I feel like everyone eventually has some sort of thing, figure in mind. Of course, that number, that goalpost might actually move, you know, it might move.
That's the thing too. Yeah, your views change.
Your views change. You're like, oh, hey, you know what? I want to get that new car, right? But yes, it's like for me, even for me living in Hong Kong, I had no desire to get a car at all whatsoever. Been taking the public transportation for almost a decade here.
Yeah, you don't really need to. Yeah.
I don't need a car, right? And then, but when you like, I grew up like, actually, it changed a few times. I grew up wanting to get a Ferrari, red one. Oh. Right? I don't know, like all kids wanted to get red Ferrari or something. Now it's like red Ferrari, like Ferraris are not Lamborghinis are the thing, or you know, stuff like that, right? But you know, and then at some phase, I'm like, I got out of that kind of adolescent stage where I'm like, okay, I don't really care for that stuff. You know, it doesn't really matter. And then I was perfectly fine living in a less than normal, I don't know what, if that sounds correct, like less than optimum place, you know, having to walk to places and all of that stuff, eating the same stuff almost every day, like eating the same stuff every meal. Every lunchtime, I know exactly what I'm eating for lunch every single day, almost every single day, like except for when I go out with friends, right? But basically, like, I don't even think about what I'm eating. I know how much it costs exactly to the cent amount, how much the food costs.
Yeah,
like I knew all that stuff already. So it becomes sort of a decision whether I want to have option A today or option B. All the other stuff on the menu are irrelevant, you know, like that's the kind of thing. So I got myself to that point, and slowly, like, having friends that, you know, they always reaching for more, and then I get to the point where I'm thinking, okay, you know what, maybe, you know, down the road, maybe I should get my, you know, aim to like get that out of the out of the assets that I build up. Of course, I'm not just going to buy with cash, like, you know, have passive income and use that to lease it or whatever, but not actually, like, you know, lock up my money. But, you know, it's something I aim for sure. Actually, I don't even know where I was getting with this. but I feel like, you know, it's kind of interesting to talk about that because, you know, coming from similar culture, being frugal with our money is definitely something we were taught growing up. Splurging was something never, you know, mentioned too much.
Yeah.
And even my parents, like, you know, my father was grew up with nothing, right? So you know, they're poor and had to save and all that stuff, and he still tells me that stuff, right? And then, like, there was a belief that I thought was true when he shared it with me, nothing on him, but like that no longer was true. And this belief was the fact that I needed to go and hire someone and find people to help me take care of certain parts of my business. And I always was under assumption that I had to do everything myself, trying to save the money, trying to do everything myself. And then I got nowhere. Right. And that was kind of like the belief that I had a long time to break through. So I guess what my question is, in terms of, you know, thinking about money or money in general, like, what is the biggest money myth or money belief that you believe now, actually, that you had to go through, you had to like break through in order to have what you have now?
I definitely have comments on what you're saying. And also to your question, I think, I think when it comes to investing in myself and my business has been very powerful. And I feel like before I would try to save, kind of like what you said, right? Like, you know, your parents taught you to, you know, care so much about saving and value and all that stuff. And then you end up thinking, oh, I don't need like paid courses to like teach me how to get to a certain place or like whatever. Now I'm all about, you know, investing in learning, investing in myself and, you know, investing in growing my business, because that's how you exponentially like get further. And then also kind of what you were saying about that mentality from your parents, as well as like that mentality of like constantly chasing more. It's like, I think the problems, I heard this from my friend, of like, he was raised to in the same way of like, oh, you gotta save a lot. And then he realized that actually was a problem, because you start having this like scarcity mentality rather than an abundance mindset. And then now, like, thinking about it, that as well as the idea of I always need more, that's another scarcity type of mindset. Even if you have like a ton of nice cars or whatever, but you're still thinking you need a lot more. Whereas on the other side is like, oh, you need to keep saving because you don't have enough. It's like both of these mentalities are probably going to hinder
coming from scarcity. Yeah,
exactly. And you're probably not going to be able to be like as presently, you know, peaceful and happy with your life if you're always thinking that way. It was just something I was just thinking about while you're telling me about these things. And I mentioned that I was saying like I make like well over six figures, like I make a decent like six figures, like
the, taxes.
I don't want
before
yeah,
California I taxes.
I don't want to make it sound like, oh, I'm like killing it or whatever. It's just like I just realized that it's probably like hindering me when I'm thinking like, oh, I need to hit this tier to be like okay type of thing or like whatever. And but at the same time, it's like an Asian thing where you start thinking, oh, you know, you need to like do more, you need to chase success. It's also a Bay Area thing, like we're always very ambitious and trying to like you know, work harder and get success. So I think there's problems with different things in this is what I was trying to get at. But I totally feel you too, of like I had that mentality too when I was like nomading, because I was like, okay, like I hit this number and I could essentially retire like in these areas. But like when I was in Chiang Mai, I saw people just like not doing anything, like just trying to get by, like just have enough to cover their expenses, which is like nothing, because when I was in Chiang Mai, I spent like $600 a month or something like that. Like
you see that a lot, like nothing on those, like some nomads be listening to this and they might fall into that camp and they might get offended, and that's I totally get it.
Yeah,
but you do see that, you see people that, you know, they're only making like $1,000-$2,000 a month passively, mm-hmm. semi-passively, however, like even if they're doing gigs and they're getting like $1,000-$2,000 a month and they're getting by, right, they're able to live comfortably, especially in places like Chiang Mai. And it's great. Oh no, I love Chiang Mai or Bali or some other place. Oh yeah, Bali, that's another one. there's that too, right? There's a lot of people in Bali also are in that space. And I mean, there's also people that are killing it over there. The same way in Chiang Mai, they're killing it, you know, e-commerce guys driving Lamborghinis. Like, oh, yeah. they have that stuff, right? But what we're referring to, I guess, is that group of people that, you know, they're getting just enough to get by, and then it's all good.
And yeah, and they just don't want to do
lose sight like of anything it. Else. I think they may lose sight of any further ambition. It's like, it's cool. It's kind of like getting a job on a really good job that pays you well, and then you don't have an urge to go and do something else.
Yeah, I think it's like okay if you feel very fulfilled with whatever you're like kind of doing, and if you've achieved that and you're like happy, like that's cool. I think like for me, I realized for me that like I needed to have a sense of purpose and like be working towards something, and that like even if you're killing it with your finances or like doing really well, like if you don't have that sense of purpose or fulfillment, or and you're not like in that present moment, you're just not going to be happy. And that's like something, you know, that's I think that's like kind of what I was trying to get at ultimately, that like it's more about the journey and more like the money should be more of a byproduct. And like actually, yeah, I'm kind of like jumping all over the place, but I was listening to this like Kevin O'Leary like YouTube video about how he got his first million or whatever, and he was talking about how like he essentially didn't realize he was like really rich till like a lot like later, because he was so like he was enjoying the process so much that he didn't care about the money, and then it just came. And then that's what he said a lot of entrepreneurs face or find, that like that's how they usually get it. It's like, oh my god, I'm rich, like because they like ended up really enjoying the process. And I just feel like that's like the way to go when you're like so like about what you're doing, like it doesn't really matter, you know.
Yeah, I think Elon Musk is like that. I don't think he really was paying attention to the number in his bank account even through his first company, you know. I think it's like just really absorbed into your work, and it's I mean, you make some little money here and there, but it's not as important as your work. And finding meaning and a purpose for what you do is, and sometimes like there's also people in the camp where they make good money, and then they just are lost and have no idea what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these cases, I think there are phases where people fall in. Some of them never have to go through that, but I guess like, I went through a few of those, and it's just a learning process. Shedding what doesn't work. And so having said that, like, what's next for you? Like, what is your plan after, you know, quarantine, after post-COVID? So I know we're recording this during COVID period. I don't know when this is airing, but still in the heat of that, hearing about a second wave coming. So what's the plan after this for your, you know, like, are you ever going to go back to being a nomad? I mean, probably you don't know that at this point, because it's so like, seems so remote.
Yeah. I mean, I probably want to in the future, but it's like interesting because now I'm in like, you know, kind of a serious relationship.
I get it.
Yeah. And I'm
in that too. I get it.
Oh yeah.
She's probably going to listen to this episode. Yeah.
Awesome. I mean, but we also talk about like maybe nomading together in the future, just like for a bit and just seeing what's out there. Cause he hasn't experienced that. And it was very eye opening, and you learn a lot when you're like abroad and meeting all the types of people. So I think that's definitely still something that like could happen. Right now we're like literally painting the house and like, you know, setting up stuff, and it's actually been really fun just being in the present moment, like fixing up this house. And I've been enjoying that, and there are definitely pros and cons to being in one place and, you know, seeing others. And I want to be able to have that freedom to like have a balance of both. Like my goal is like, you know, if we have a family or anything like that, at least like we would be able to not need to go to an office, and we can like spend time with our, you know, kid or kids or whatever.
Yeah, I love that. I love that mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Bring like, I wish more Asians were nomads. You know, I think I just said it. Like, I wish more Asians were nomads.
I wish more people were nomads.
They'll be able to see. They'll be able to see the world from a different lens, and that's really important these days. Have that worldly experience. And you imagine having like a bunch of nomads sitting down, and then they're just chatting about like their world adventures in this country, and then I had like this crazy thing happen. Have like in the last couple of years had a lot of those stories, and I wish that I sometimes, when you have friends that are not in that, you know, that never done that before, it would seem like bragging to them. It would seem like bragging to them when you're just really excited because you want to have someone to share it with. There's that feeling, right? It's like, yeah, you wish more people were nomads, they can experience this. And more in general, I wish more Asians were nomads, because I always get that especially in Hong Kong, people hear nomad like, what? You don't have like a base?
That's crazy.
They'll think that you're unstable. They'll think there's something wrong with you, almost like, oh, you must have like, you know, you probably are not making a lot of money. You're probably just living off your parents, you know, like it's so stuff like that. You know, you get that kind of stigma. And they would never like see that other side of what's possible. And that's not to say like only Asians have that. It's also like non-Asians have that as well. Like, in general, people that are not, that have not been exposed to this, or don't have friends that have been exposed to this, may not even cross their mind. They will say, hey, I want to travel the world one day. And we hear that so much, right? I'm sure you hear that a lot. Hey, I want to travel the world someday. And you even on social media, you have people in the comments like, hey, I want to be like you one day, travel. Like,
yeah,
no, I don't know if you want to be like me, you know, doing all this. Because it's, you know, there is a good part of it, and there's also the other, you know, the stressful part of it. But people say it, and they never really go through with it, because it's very easy to say it and feel good about it in the moment. Like, yeah, I do want to travel the world, right?
But they don't
do
it.
And then they don't do it. So it's just like, man, I wish I can just, give you that. But I can't.
For sure. So, when I was nomading, I would think like, I mean, I was just missing if all my friends like just went with me, like it would be so cool.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, it is very doable and people like don't realize that. So I try to kind of like show how it's all possible if that's something you want to do, but I'm also supportive of if that's not what you want to do, that's fine, I think. But what you were saying about like, you know, is nomading in your future, I still get nostalgic and I still like reminisce. And yeah. I think in the future, like my plan hopefully is to have places overseas and be able to out, but also like be able to visit them like when I want to. And it's all about kind of the freedom to like live a life true to yourself is what I care
living,
about.
Having homes around the world. That's the kind of like, I my mind is like bases around the world, right?
Exactly. So, yeah.
Once here, like let's say given the whole, for one, I don't like summers in Hong Kong.
It's hot.
It's hot. It's humid. Like, yeah, I can imagine. Like, imagine you have a perfect year. Where will you spend January? Where will you spend February? Where will you spend August? Where will you spend December? Right, and then you have mm-hmm. like a different city or country mapped out, and different climate.
Right. Yeah.
Because I want to be somewhere cold. Actually, you know what? What I don't in Hong Kong. Let's say in Hong Kong. I don't like summers in particular, but summers are still great because it's summer, right? Because mm-hmm. if I'm out on the beach, yeah, that's fine, right? But if I'm like mm-hmm. walking around the street in the hot concrete it's jungle, worse. No, it's terrible, right?
Yeah.
But what I don't like more than summers is winters in Hong Kong.
Me too. Oh, in Hong Kong, really?
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's not cold enough. It doesn't feel like winter. That's my complaint. Like, it's not cold enough. So like it would, I guess for listeners is we're trying to paint like a picture where even if you're not a nomad, but you can get the idea that, or don't want to be a nomad, you get an idea of like this ideal of being able to live and work anywhere in the world, which is now even perpetrated even further because of everyone staying home, is remote work is becoming more and more acceptable. Mm-hmm. Being able to work and live anywhere in the world and any climate that you want. So December for me would be probably New York. It'd probably be home with my family.
Wow.
And that's how I like it. You know, even like November, December in New York.
It's so cold.
and summer, ideally, I would probably be in Bali or something.
Interesting.
Maybe not summer.
Maybe I'm all about European summers.
Yeah. Maybe not summer because there's going to be too much tourists.
Yeah.
But like off season, probably like the off seasons. Chiang Mai, I'll probably be there in January, February.
Yeah, I agree with that.
do Muay Thai and then skip out the burning season, all of that stuff. And
yeah.
Like that kind of planning, you know, it's crazy. Being mm-hmm. living in one place your whole life, for me now, it just seems insane. At least your mm-hmm. whole life, right? At least spend a phase of your life exploring and figuring out what is possible. And then figuring out the passive income stuff, which it gets thrown around a lot. People always love to talk about passive income, but the reason I asked the first question in the beginning was, how long can people keep it passive? You know, like that's the sort of stuff. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's passive, sometimes it's semi-passive, sometimes it just goes from passive to semi-passive to zero, right? It's like that. And then it's not that upward trajectory. It's always that, you know, up and down. Some months are better than others. And so... Yeah, I mean, for those that want to follow you, want to take your course, learn more about, you know, blogging, finances, and so forth, where can they find you, Sharon?
Yeah, they can find me at digitalnomadquest.com. You can also check out my podcast, Digital Nomad Quest Podcast with Sharon Sung. Then all my social media is like my name, Sharon Sung. So like my YouTube, my Instagram, everything like that. If you want to find my course, I have two of them on my site, digitalnomadquest.com. It's a Blog Launch Profit and the Etsy Entrepreneur. So you guys can check that out.
Awesome. And I know that the first few listeners to take action will get a very small discount, correct?
Yeah, so I want to confirm with you with the code, right? Wait, do you edit this, by the way? Just
I would just put the link in the show notes. So we'll get the link from you in the show notes, and those that go in there, click it, and first five will get the discount. We don't know how much it is right now. We don't know, but go and check it out. Should have it in the discount code, probably. What you'll get out of it. So, anyways, it was great having you on the show, Sharon. It's amazing. Really grateful to be able to speak with someone that's also been on that nomad journey. Someone that's also come from a similar background, and someone that's also constantly striving to improve and bring others with them to on that journey. So really appreciate it, Sharon.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. You can find more episodes every Tuesday. If you haven't done so, please subscribe for more updates as they come. Until next time.